Welcome to the Actual Fluency Podcast with Chris Broholm. This show will inspire, motivate, and teach you how to learn foreign languages the best way. On this show, you'll hear incredible stories from amazing language learners who've learned 5 to 10, even 30 plus languages, as well as industry experts who help shape modern language learning through innovation and research. As we dive into language learning methods, techniques, and apps, you'll quickly discover what works and what doesn't. This is the Actual Fluency Podcast, and this is Chris Broholm.
This episode of the Actual Fluency Podcast is brought to you by Optolingo. You can learn over 18 languages with the guided immersion method. For your free lesson, just go to optolingo.com. That's optilingo.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 178 of the Actual Fluency Podcast. I'm really happy to have you back for another interview with a great language learner and influencer, Lina Vasquez. And in this episode, we talk about a lot of things. This is a very, very deep kind of episode. Lina is very passionate about personal development and psychology, languages and language learning, culture and travel. And so we get kind of around a little bit of everything, and we try to dive deep into the bottom motivation and passion for improvement, the general desire to be better in a way, as cliche as that kind of sounds. But what that means is basically you want more out of life, whether you want to be more fluent in French, or you want to be fitter, or you want to have, you know, build your income. Or we really discuss this idea that everything is related, and language learning as a metaphor really symbolizes everything else in life quite well. So the techniques and things that we talk about in the podcast in general are widely applicable to any area in life you want to pursue. This is a special treat for me. It's a really good episode. A lot of topics that I really like. You know, sometimes we talk about what apps to use and, you know, what methods to use, very specific tactics. But this episode is really more of a meta episode. It's really more of a mindset and underlying psychology episode. So if that's not for you, obviously, you know, wait for the next episode. I'm sure we'll get into some more tactics, strategies, and more tangible ideas. These are a little bit esoteric, but that's what I like to do, and I know that's what Lina likes to do as well. So let's enjoy the episode with Lina Vasquez. Lina, welcome finally to the Actual Fluency Podcast. It's been a long time coming. So do you want to start off by giving the listeners just a little introduction to who you are, where you're from, and how you got your first interest in language learning?
Thank you for having me, first of all, Chris. I know we've been talking about finally recording an episode for, I think, about a year or maybe more. So it's here. We are here. So hello, guys. My name is Lina Vasquez, as Chris just introduced me. And how I got into languages. I feel like languages kind of found me, to be honest. I was born in Latvia and I grew up in Australia. And so the first kind of 7 years of my life were really spent in airports. I think airports, that was a prominent memory that I have from my childhood, of constantly flying between Latvia and Australia with my mom. And with that, you know, came this immersion of obviously the Latvian language and the English language. But I was just so astounded and intrigued as a child by all of these different tongues that were being spoken around me. And my mom put me into an international school, so it was full of people from over 40, 50 different countries. And I was actually in the New Arrivals program, which is the one that you get put into when you don't speak English very well. So I actually had to learn English, as my second language kind of thing. And I think from there on, I just was surrounded by people from many different cultures. My first best friend was Serbian, and then I had a French friend and Greek friends, and it was just such a fascinating, almost superpower that I found, that when you even learned how to say one or two phrases in another language, your relationship to a person completely changed. So I think that that is something I've taken from my childhood. And I always just say languages, or what inspired my love of languages, was a love of people and a curiosity for people and finding out how people interrelate, connect, to grow my connections to different cultures in the world. And so I went on to study languages and linguistics with law at university. And then I went to university in Germany for a brief period of time. And that's kind of how it all started. And so now I work as a language and communication coach. So that involves me not so much teaching languages anymore. So I did that for about 6 years, but I now, you know, have a YouTube channel, or three YouTube channels, which I run, and I love kind of, yeah, performing and creating videos about communication and psychology. So I've really intertwined now in my coaching a mix of, you know, self-confidence, psychology, still with that aspect of communication. So how people can communicate with more confidence, not only in a foreign language, but also in their own language. So that's just the kind of just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, let's dig deeper into that iceberg. Ooh, and first of all, we should give a little disclaimer is that obviously the world is still in a bit of a uncertain place, and if you're listening to this in the future, I hope things are better then. But for now, if you hear, you know, sort of motorbikes going by, or you know, a bit of echo in the recording, then it's just because you just can't get these like studio like quality at this time. I just want to put that out there, and it's also record high temperatures today in Denmark. Anyway, we've got about 35 Celsius, you know, probably in the 90s in Fahrenheit, and it's just unbearable for this country. We're just not used to it. And so I have to have the windows open, which unfortunately will mean a little bit of noise. But I hope you guys can manage that and bear with us as we get back to a more normal everyday life. And obviously this isn't something really I want to include in this episode, but I was interested in your kind of international upbringing. And, and I guess that a lot of people who go through that kind of international school end up being sort of global citizens in a way that like to travel a lot, and they see across borders for jobs and opportunities, and maybe do some things that aren't as standard. But what went into your decision to sort of study languages in a formal way? Because I think often we can get this kind of idea of it's fun to do it as a hobby or on the side, but as soon as academics get in the way, for me anyway, it kind of sometimes removes some of the things that I like about it. It becomes this kind of chore almost, to the point where I'm thinking like, is this really what I like about languages? You know, when I did a bit of an English degree here in Denmark, and it was just very boring. And you know, going into a linguistic class, I know a lot of people like that stuff, and I have a lot of linguistics friends. Yeah. But for me, it was just like that wasn't what attracted me to languages personally. It wasn't like talking about it or studying about languages. It was more what you could achieve with the language skills and seeing how that process could be improved. So how did you make that kind of jump from, okay, I speak a few languages through immersion and I kind of want to do more languages? Or was that based on, did you have any potential jobs in the future that you thought, oh, this is going to be super fun to do?
Well, I think that's a really good point, Chris, because I think the way that you just described your experience with languages is unfortunately very much what people call the traditional route. And it's very much a reality for many people that they see languages as something supplementary, or there is this idea and this belief around language learning as being something very institutionalized. And to be very honest with you, I think I was very privileged that my beliefs around languages and the way that I was personally introduced into not only languages as in my everyday life, but in terms of language learning as well, I was very blessed to have always had a very positive, I'm going to say, belief system around them. So when I started learning foreign languages, I was really like 7, 8, 9 years old. And it came from the fact that I just loved to learn. And my mom as well, she studied Spanish when I was a kid, and my stepfather is also Spanish speaking. So we grew up kind of learning Spanish together. And so the environment that I was in, first of all, was very supportive of languages being a very, you know, fun and uplifting experience. So I actually never really had that traditional perspective until very late, much later in life. And I think by that point, you know, when I reached university and studied, you know, I majored in German, I minored in French, and I did Russian and Italian on the side as well, I had already developed my own way of learning languages. So I had my own system, and I didn't actually need to rely too much on what other people said or how other people were teaching. I kind of just took the input and transformed it and created my own journey, if that makes sense. So, languages for me, you know, I found them in, you know, dance festivals on the weekend because we went to Latino parties, or on Sundays because my dad was very religious. We would go to church every Sunday, and the church kind of mass was in Spanish. And so I really lived languages. So I never saw it. I never actually thought about a career in languages. When I was in high school, I actually wanted to be a journalist. And I thought, okay, these languages for me are an asset. They can open up doors, but they are not what I primarily want to do. And then, yeah, it's kind of funny that I landed into doing what I am doing now, because I initially wanted to be a lawyer or a psychologist. And so I went down that route, obviously studying languages on the side to kind of balance everything out. But I think that it's very important. Like, my number one tip for anybody listening who kind of has those traditional beliefs around languages just being supplementary, or having kind of, you know, you already feel it. Like, if somebody says language learning, and based on your own experiences, if you're kind of sighing right now, or you're thinking back to your, you know, grade 7 teacher who taught you French or Indonesian or whatever, and you're thinking, I hated that person, you ruined languages for me, I would say to just remind yourself that that doesn't have to be the case, and to also just be open to exploring new avenues. I think that is probably one of the key things that stops people from actually having a good experience, is they're so trapped by their old limiting beliefs around where languages can take you.
And do you think that the kind of current educational system, obviously generalizing across the world, is doing a good job right now of kind of helping, supporting learners who are obviously the ambitious learners are doing a lot on their own, kind of leaving some of the less ambitious behind. But do you think that the current educational system in regards to languages is a good one? Or is there some kind of revolution that would be coming?
Well, if we're gonna have a very simple answer, you guys can probably already guess what I'm going to say. I'm going to say no. and I think it very much depends on, as you said, we're generalizing. I think it very much depends on which state, which city we're looking at, which system we're talking about. I can only personally speak from my experiences, from the people that I have met and the students that I have taught and the experiences I've collected from them. But I think that there are a couple of key issues that the education system as a whole is not bringing to light and is really not, you know, doing anything about, which in turn causes people to actually have a very skewed view on learning and a very negative perspective when it comes to learning in general, and in specific language learning. And I think it all starts with, you know, people not understanding themselves or not being given an avenue of expression in terms of what their, you know, own cognitive preferences are, their personality and learning styles. You know, everybody is a unique individual, and yet the education system is basically treating everybody as you know, a series of robots. Not fully, but, you know, I've been very blessed to have had really amazing language teachers, and I can honestly say, I think if I in high school didn't have inspiring language teachers, perhaps my view on language learning would be very different right now, or I may not have gone into taking, you know, undertaking languages in university because of that reason. But I think, you know, coming back to the main point, people learn at very different rates. People are very different types of learners, and some people need more support than others. Some people know, you know, especially let's say we're talking about high school or even early university, at that age, you're still discovering yourself. You're still discovering your own learning style. You're discovering your passions. And, you know, languages are not going to be for everybody, but I think it's important for teachers to identify the different styles of students or the different interests of students and really help them find their motivation and help them become, you know, autodidact. So people that can learn by themselves, because I think that was always the key indicator from my own studies of knowing who was going to succeed in a course and who wasn't. And it had nothing to do with how much knowledge they had or, you know, if they had found the perfect system, which we know doesn't exist, but it was about how motivated are they to just explore, like how passionate are they about this subject, or let's say about something in that language. So those are kind of my two cents on that topic in a nutshell.
It's not easy. It's not easy to change the old way of thinking, especially in a such an organized system.
Exactly. And just on that point, a bit of an insider. I'm not going to disclose names or institutions because I feel like I could get sued. But but I actually started. You're one of the first people I'm telling this to, Chris, as well. Well, and everybody listening. So
you're close friends, you know.
And our friends. We're all friends here. You guys are friends. But I actually 2 weeks ago I enrolled in a language course in my old university, because in order to graduate from one of the programs that I was doing, I didn't realize I had to still complete a couple of units. So I decided to do that, and I enrolled in a French course. And I was in this like with the same professor in 2013 and 2014. So it's been, you know, six or seven years. And Chris, the structure is exactly the same. The topics we are covering, the book we are even using, is exactly the same as it was 6 or 7 years ago. And I think that just highlights one of the key issues that really requires transformation. And yeah, just transformation in the language learning world. You need to have fresh new ideas and techniques in terms of learning, because otherwise it just becomes boring. And as soon as that switch goes off in a student where they see it as something mechanical, that's where the learning stops. And that's where it becomes really tedious and just the opposite of how your brain even enjoys learning.
Yeah, and that goes all the way back to probably your first experiences in primary school, elementary school, where you have your first, could be French, could be German, whatever, could be English, you know, that was for me, where if you have a bad teacher or a bad curriculum or bad setup, you could potentially be scarred for life and have these ideas that, oh, I'm not a language person, I don't like languages. And, you know, if you focus the curriculum about memorization and vocabulary and maybe even reading, then people who are not really into those things will get very bored. And I think that the key, at least for me, the funniest part of language learning will always be speaking, you know, and singing to some degree. I think that works well, especially in the younger classes where you can sing songs in the foreign language. That also helps pronunciation very well. But there's just this emphasis about we need to do tables and vocabulary lists and a lot of reading. And by the time you graduate, you know, there's just not enough practice with actual speaking and listening in some degrees as well.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of baffled by that, because you'd think at some point some clever person would realize, you know what, languages are not the same as physics or chemistry or mathematics, and then maybe we shouldn't teach them the same way. But it's just stuck in the past. And obviously in every country, or at least most countries that I'm aware of, all this is regulated by the government, because they want all the students to know certain things. And obviously it's much easier to, does the student know the meaning of these 50 words, or can the student speak for 10 minutes? I mean, that last one is very hard to kind of define and compare, whereas the first one is like, do you know it or not? And so I think those are the challenges for the educational system. But of course, we can do things simultaneously. You know, we can do our little protest in a way where we, you know, like your YouTube channel, my podcast and other people's blogs and books and videos that kind of showcase that you not only can you learn a language outside of school, it's actually also in most cases advantageous and more efficient, and it's certainly cheaper. So, I mean, we're all doing our little part, and maybe hopefully one day some of these, I know some schools, and there are some teachers out there I've heard stories about, who kind of take a lot of responsibility and initiative in improving the condition of their personal school or language course. And so that's positive, but I definitely think that's a long way to go, and our activism needs to continue to hopefully get more people excited about it.
This is the Actual Fluency Podcast with Chris Broholm. Make sure to join the Actual Fluency email club by going to actualfluency.com/join. We'll be right back after these messages.
Big shout out to Optilingo for sponsoring the Actual Fluency Podcast here in 2020. Optilingo is a language learning app that features a method known as guided immersion to teach you over 18 languages at the time of recording this segment. And it focuses a lot about speaking and repeating and listening, of course, to get your pronunciation just right. It doesn't bother about grammar. It doesn't bother about long explanations of syntax or morphology or any kind of complicated concepts that kind of hold you back from speaking better. And you can get a free lesson right now if you go to optilingo.com. That's optilingo.com, Optilingo. And if you do decide to subscribe for the full version of each language, like I said, there are more than 18 actually available. It's only $5 a month. So it's extremely affordable as well for the full package. But I'm just really happy they are part of the podcast here in 2020. And it's run by my good friend, John T, who kind of stumbled upon the method that the app teaches when he was trying to learn his own heritage language of Circassian, of which there is not a lot of resources out there for. So thank you so much to John T and Optilingo. I hope you give it a try. And let's get back to the action.
You're listening to the Actual Fluency Podcast. And now, back to Chris.
No, exactly. Exactly. And I think, you know, coming from the alternative perspective, so obviously, you know, understanding what it's like to be a teacher as well, I can empathize with, you know, the other side of the coin, where especially in, you know, schools and universities where you have a large group of people that you need to kind of, you know, meet their needs, it can be difficult. And it all does start, you know, on the macro scale of the education boards, and they want, you know, very quantitative results. They want to have percentages and symbols and you know, like something tangible to measure people by. But language learning is not like that. So I think that, yeah, the best language teachers are the ones that are trendsetters, and they in their classrooms, they reinvent the learning style while still meeting the, you know, the requirements of the board. But as well, I also think that not everybody should become a teacher. You know, teaching is seen as something super simple, but actually teaching isn't about leading in terms of being a dictator. It's very much about facilitating, and the students are and should always be at the core, you know, and I think language teachers don't actually ask their students enough where they need support. How can I help you? I think that relationship is the one that allows for students to feel comfortable to speak more in class and make mistakes and ask questions. And I think that as well is one part of the issue.
Absolutely. And this is also where really good teachers differentiate themselves so strongly, because it's very easy to be a bad teacher. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I do, from my own experience, I do tend to see a lot of teachers who, you know, stick by the curriculum, do what they're told, and then once they have that memorized or under their belt, then for the next 30 years until they retire, they just repeat that every year.
Unless how boring is that, though?
Yeah, I mean, I would
even for you as a teacher.
Oh yeah, I mean that would bore me so much. So, but anyway, like I said, I hope that what we do and what's happening, a lot of the, I mean, just the fact that there is a polyglot community, I think, is
Chris?
A positive. Yeah.
3, 2, 1. Chris?
Oh, I just lost you temporarily, but we are back. I was just going to say, the fact that there is a community around learning languages today, some people call it the polyglot community, I think is a great indicator that positive changes are happening and that more people are seeing the benefits. And it's funny that the more global the world becomes, like the more connected we become, it seems like the value of learning languages goes up. Which is really cool. And I think that there's a lot of people always ask me, like, you know, is Google Translate not just going to replace translators all the time? And I'm just like, no, it won't matter. There will never be a time where technology replaces. I mean, you might get technology that teaches you the language, like implants it into your brain, but you'll still learn the language because of the personal connections. You know, exactly. Learning a language is not about translating accurately or being able to conduct a conversation. It's the connection. Mm-hmm. And if you have to, I don't know if you've seen those Kickstarter campaigns with these earbuds.
I have indeed.
It's just so awful. And people are like, oh, these are magical. And I'm like, those are just earbuds with a microphone in it that connects to Google Translate. The technology is already there. If anyone listening wants to try this kind of magical translation device, just pull up your phone, download the Google Translate app, and there you can actually use the app with a voice recording. And you can kind of, if you, let's say you're talking to somebody at a market somewhere in a country you don't speak the language, you speak into the microphone, it then plays back the other language. And then when they respond, it automatically plays back in your language. So that technology is already there. But what a kind of boring, I mean, it's great to have the connection if you don't have any other choice. But what a kind of, you know, transaction-like experience. It's just horrible. Well, it's not that horrible, but you know what I mean. And I think that we're going in the right direction anyway.
Yeah, and I think, you know what, I would strongly be of the opinion that I think that something like that, it would very quickly lose that essence of novelty, because with, I think it's kind of like a Nintendo. I don't know, you know, anybody listening. I remember being a kid and the only thing I wanted was a Nintendo DS. Like everybody around me had a Nintendo DS. I thought this was going to be this amazing revolutionary thing. I could bond with my friends. So I finally got one quite late after all my friends. And I used it, I think, for maybe a couple of weeks, and then I slowly stopped bringing it to school, and then I never used it again, and it just sat there in my room. And I think that what people often forget when they see these devices and especially the way that they are marketed is they kind of forget the reality of the situation. And I think that language underlies all expression, and language isn't just about translation. It is about body language. It is about communicating a message which isn't only kind of implied in the wording you use, but it's so much more. And, you know, if those of you listening, like, think about a business transaction or an important discussion that you have to have, you know, an official matter that you need to discuss in another language. If you're having to use these earplugs or whatever, first of all, your brain isn't doing any work. Therefore, it's going to become boring very quickly because It's removing that element of, you know, gratification within you of achieving something, of actually being able to use and own in on a new skill. And it's going to get very frustrating because there, you know, I think such technology only really follows the development of humans. So it can only copy and mimic that which a human is able to put into a system or into, you know, AI already. So language is one of those things where, for example, with expressions and vocabulary in itself, it's always changing. You know, like if I look at the German language, for example, especially being here in Berlin, Denglish is such a thing where it's become a norm to use a lot of English words and mix them with German words and then create new words. And AI can't catch up with that as quickly.
No. So
imagine you're in a situation and you hear that, and then your little earpiece has translated it literally, and you're in the middle of like a sales call or something. That's going to stuff up everything. So I think that anybody who thinks that they can rely on technology is really doing themselves a massive disservice, both in the short term and in the long term.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And also, it's not desirable anyway. It's not,
no.
That's not fun. But, you know, technology can obviously help us in many ways, like
yeah.
with the learning aspect. And I'm excited to see innovation in the language learning field. I think there's definitely lots of room for developing new methods and ideas that kind of transcend the old flashcard apps. And
oh, yeah, definitely.
So many of. And it's not because they don't work. I'm just kind of bored with it. It's like, there's 500 of them yeah. now. I think that's enough for sure. But speaking of sort of how to learn languages, I saw on one of your great YouTube channels that you had a video about you were speaking in, was it 15 different languages?
Oh, so yeah, the one where I switched between them.
Obviously, you have a lot of experience in language learning, and I assume at very different times and levels and kind of intensity. So would you take us through, like, how did language learning look for you near the beginning of your experience, and what would it look like today? What's sort of the evolution you've gone through as a language learner?
Oh my gosh, what a question. Well,
take your time.
I think language has always been a means of, yeah, of creative expression for me. So if I look back at when I started learning languages or how I kind of took it upon myself to really learn my first foreign language, which was Spanish and then it was French kind of between the ages of 11 and 13. And then I went into school and did them. I kind of just took a really intuitive approach, to be honest. I just tried a lot of things. So I started by actually picking up a book in French from the library because my school had a multilingual book section. And even though I couldn't read the language, I'd never learned the language, I kind of just did it. And then I obviously had no idea what I was doing, but I could understand a couple of words because I thought that they were similar to Spanish. And yeah, I think I started learning from other people, and that has really stayed at the core of my own personal preferred method or strategy or whatever you want to call it, is I learn best from, like, by asking questions and really just by doing. So I would just constantly ask other people and my friends, hey, how do you say this? How do you say this? Or I would test out the phrase that I'd seen in a little phrase book and then use it. Or when my mom and I would be, you know, out and about or traveling, I would ask her to how do I say this in Russian? How do I say that in Russian? And then I would use it. And so obviously then I went into like traditional schooling and kind of let myself be a little bit more passive and tried out a lot of, well, I just kind of followed textbooks and followed what the teacher did. And then it was really, I would say, in my last year of university or a bit after that even, where I was suddenly thrown into, yeah, taking control of my own learning and really recognizing or putting together all the pieces of what I had found worked, what I found didn't work. And especially in my, yeah, in my last years of university, I used a lot more YouTube. So for anybody who's trying to put dates together, this was in maybe 2015, 2016. So I watched series and YouTube was really becoming, you know, more prominent in terms of language learning. So I kind of mixed, I did a lot of input. I read a lot more language blogs, took advice from other people and polyglots, and kind of, just explored a lot until I found my, method now, which really depends on what the goal is I'm trying to reach and is very focused on speaking. So I still very much learn from other people. I love to just throw myself into situations, talk, make mistakes. I mean, just 2 days ago, I was, in a Portuguese conversation and I was like, in any type of real life input. So if you're, if you overhear a dialogue or if you're sitting with friends who are speaking in a language you're learning, I will really be more attentive than usual and listen out and find patterns in how they speak and then mimic them, ask for confirmation if what I've said was correct, and then make sure I reuse that language as soon as possible so that it gets stored in my long-term memory. And then I also just love creating videos in other languages. That really has become, the main means of how I keep up my languages is I have a lot of, business calls or coaching calls and I create a lot of videos in multiple languages and that helps me maintain them now. So that's kind of, I don't know if that was a short answer, but that's the overview.
No, it makes sense. So what kind of... What I got, basically, let me just see if I got it exactly right. You're very much focused on the speaking first approach and practical use of it. You don't sit down and read a book for 3 or 4 months before saying your first word, like to do. Nothing wrong with that. So some people listening who might not be as experienced might think, well, how do you get that into a practical language? Because it sounds like she's just kind of... waltzing about learning, two phrases here and there. How does that become like a useful amount of, let's say, vocabulary and phrases? Do you just build on top of it, or do you do anything, let's say, outside the practical scenarios that kind of reinforce it, or do you write them down when you get home? How does it work?
No, definitely. I think this is a great question because it's actually making me think a lot. Because as I said, it's been something I've been doing for, decade now or more. So it's become so innate to me that I don't break down the process anymore. But I would say I definitely write down things. So it's just, in terms of language learning, it encompasses so many tidbits, like so many tiny details. So if you imagine it, if I think of it in an analogy, it's like, imagine you're building a house. And you normally think of, a house has, bricks or wood or metal or whatever it's made of these days. And we've got some plaster here. And then I've got, my couch and table. What you don't see is, or what you don't think about is all the, are all the screws that were used and all the little bolts and things. So I think taking everything that I've done apart, it's, my learning happens sometimes when I'm sitting on the train and I have a phrase that comes to me. I will get out my phone and my notes app on my phone. If anybody wants to see it, it has the most random phrases and words that in different languages, because when they come to me, I make sure to write them down. Or if I've, if I've Googled something or I've asked a friend, I do make sure I write it down. And it's not always, on my phone. It's also in my journal or on pieces of paper that I have lying nearby, but I like to keep it usually stored in one location. But I do definitely I do write things down and I do do the kind of more theoretical side because it allows me to process the language and have it ingrained, in both my visual memory and as well just in terms of recollection. So I do a lot of different things, Chris. That's the thing. Like I also record my voice so that I have the pronunciation aspect. I get called out on saying pronunciation wrong all the time, but it's because in Australia we learn to say it most of the time as pronunciation anyway.
Yeah, that's a funny one because I said it the other way too. I never heard the word pronunciation before.
Yeah, exactly.
But I was like 20, I must have been at least 23.
Yeah.
And somebody said, you know, it's actually pronunciation, right? And I was like, what?
I know.
Why would it be? It's too pronounced. So surely it should be pronunciation.
Exactly.
And it's like, when I looked it up, I was shocked. Let me just put it that way. But anyway, I totally feel you on that.
You see, guys, no one's perfect. No one's perfect. No matter how many years.
It's very difficult. I don't understand why people are like, oh, Chinese, Russian, all these languages are so difficult. And they forget that English is really, really tricky. I think it might be trickier than some of those languages because, yeah, they might have many rules, but at least they're kind of consistent.
Yeah.
English is just a mess, really. And
that's a great way to put it. That's the fun of languages. That's the thing. You can. There is no end goal. So for anybody who likes certainty and having control over everything, be prepared to have your limits tested when you learn language.
Yeah, lots of frustrating moments as well, I'm sure, you know. And, you know, there's still words I can't say in English, you know, so.
Yeah, exactly.
It's never over. And there are still words I don't know the meaning of, you know.
Yeah, and that's normal. 200,000
words. There's no way I'm going to know all of them. And you shouldn't expect to do that in a foreign language either. So, that happens.
Exactly. But yeah, so just to kind of summarize the last question and really summarize my answer. So for anybody who's really thinking, oh, that, you know, does she go and learn a few phrases here and there and that's it? No, it's all very balanced between having a lot of input and listening and getting a rhythm and feel for the language in the beginning, then learning to write. But writing kind of does come later. Just now, like based on my goals now. Obviously, you know, for example, with my French course at the moment, it does involve a lot of grammar. And I think grammar is a great thing because it, you know, it does help you kind of fast track by learning certain rules so that you don't need to kind of, well, you don't need to reinvent the wheel if there are already rules that exist that are going to help you understand the language better. So it's a balance, I would say.
Well, that's a personality thing anyway, because some people love to tinker with grammar and
and
drill the various exercises and, you know, fill in the blanks and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I think if that is something you enjoy, then by all means do more and more of it because you get that with those kind of drills, you definitely learn the grammar, of course, but it also gives you vocabulary and pronunciation,
exactly. And honestly, that is one of the key things that I am, you know, currently really passionate about and working on in terms of transforming the way that people learn languages. Is first and foremost, the most important thing is for you to understand who you are as a learner and what drives you and what inspires you, and to create that confidence within yourself of understanding where, you know, what fuels your drive to achieve whatever it is that you want to achieve in the language, and to have the confidence to say no to other methods or for people who try and tell you, oh, you should do this, you should try this. Like, that is really a point that I've got into where I know my way of learning, and that came through a lot of trial and error. And if you are someone who loves, you know, taking classes or having group lessons or studying from a book or, you know, reading more, and you're more, let's say, you know, you take your time and you like to process things in a more introverted manner, that is perfectly okay. And that is so important to distinguish. And I think a lot of people miss that step, that they don't actually understand, you know, their own kind of cerebral or, you know, cognitive preferences. And they let themselves kind of be taken down a route that doesn't actually suit them.
Exactly. And I see this a lot with people seeing that other people like to read a lot, and so they try to read even though they don't really like to read.
Yeah.
And or they'll do the, like, the Benny Lewis approach, you know, go out and speak day one, but they're actually not really comfortable with that and they feel really kind of exposed that way. And it's better just to chill and do a few months of you know, the silent period, as some people like to call it, just kind of work on your language before you start using it. It's all about finding your own approach. And I think that if anything that I've learned from doing all these interviews is that there is no one answer. You know, there are hundreds and hundreds of ways to do it. And at the end of the day, as long as you put time into it, the method itself doesn't really matter that much. It's more what you like to do and you can do a yeah. lot of. And then over time, that will lead you somewhere. I can't promise it will lead you to fluency or mastery or whatever, but it'll definitely give you something. And it's a good way to get some momentum going. And then you can always reevaluate once you've done it for a while where you want to go with it. Some people are perfectly happy just knowing a few touristy phrases and getting around in their holiday village or whatever, whereas others would like to understand the deeper meaning of very serious literary works or, you know, understanding native speakers when they speak really fast about technical subjects. Whatever your goals may be, it all starts from this early momentum of doing whatever you like to do for a period of time, quite an extended period of time. Sometimes yeah. people don't realize the amount of time it takes. You know, we have these kind of guidelines. We all cite these Foreign Service Institute guidelines, which are obviously completely generalizing. But if they are somewhat correct, then it means to learn a similar language would take somewhere in the region of, you know, maybe 500 to 600 hours. And that's just conversational. That's not even near mastery. So if you want to take it to mastery, it's even further. And you have to think about 500 hours. Okay, that's like, you know, 1.5 hours a day or thereabouts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a lot of study time. And most people just don't have that. That's why they never get anywhere.
Yeah. It's
because they do like 10 minutes every Sunday or something, you know. So you have to decide what's your goal. And if your goal is to master a language because you have maybe your partners from there, you want to impress them or you want to meet the in-laws or whatever, you need to really work a lot on it. And there's no magic pill or anything that will get you to your goals immediately. But then again, you don't really need to because the whole process is quite enjoyable. You know, as long as you can say one thing, then that's super fun to be able to start using the language, even if it's just a little bit. It's a process.
It is. And if you break all of that down and put it into really simple, actionable steps, all it is taking action on a consistent basis and committing just to doing something that is going to get you towards your ideal goal every single day, you know.
That sounds a lot like succeeding in anything.
Oh my God, yeah. I thought you were about to say, but Lena, no. That's the thing. But I think people they sabotage themselves by overwhelming themselves in the beginning. You know, they're already, if you imagine a multi-story building, like a high-rise building, they're already thinking about the 40th floor when they haven't even left the ground floor yet. And that is with anything. Like, you are going to waste time that you could have spent actually climbing up those stairs and taking all of those steps in terms of, by overthinking or trying to figure out, which strategy should I take? So if we're sticking to our analogy, you know, should I wear the running shoes up these stairs? Flops not? Like, all of that time is just wasted. Just go. Use what you have. Do what you can with the knowledge you have. And as you said, Chris, you know, readjust the strategy as you go along. If you find, this isn't working for me right now, or, you know, I've been doing this and it's kind of, I don't know if it's really suiting my goals still, that's fine. But you've made progress and you've moved forward and you've changed and you've found that out. You're not going to find out what works and what doesn't work if you don't actually just take the first step. And that's with anything, as you said, any type of goal.
Yeah, that's. I think also that's what got me into languages at relatively older age compared to a lot of the people on this show is that I had a, let's say, 2013, 14, where I didn't really know what to do with my life or anything. I didn't have any academic plans, didn't have any kind of future jobs I could imagine myself doing. And I attended this polyglot gathering, the first gathering, which was the second ever polyglot event, official one anyway. And at that point, you know, you have a choice where you think, okay, what am I going to kind of devote? What industry, what business, what kind of category of interest do I dedicate my life to? And I think, I don't think you can dabble at that. You can't be like, oh, I'm going to do, you can't be, let's say you want to do a YouTube channel, for instance. It would be extremely difficult to do a YouTube channel that was about tennis and chess and clay figure molding or anything. You could, but you're going to be in so many different directions. So when I looked at languages, I thought, wow, this really mimics success in everything.
Yeah.
The way you succeed in language, it's like a consistent effort. It requires the brain. You need to think and learn.
You would hope so.
Yeah. Well, I suppose you could do it, just kind of throwing somebody in immersion mode. But
the 8 hours sleep and learn a language videos. Definitely.
Right. There you go. Just press play.
Yeah.
That's what fascinated me early on, was that language learning is really a metaphor. And if you manage to do that well, I will guarantee that you will do very well in other areas, maybe every area of your life that you're interested in.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not about tricks or tactics or the methods like we talked about. It's really a mindset, and it's really a... And that's a growth mindset, as some people have coined it, where every day you're getting a little bit better. And now just talking about the languages, every day you're getting a little bit better at the language, and eventually you'll be very good at it.
Yeah.
And I think kind of mastering life, as it were, which is kind of a grand statement, is essentially the same thing. You're stacking continuous small improvement, small wins, mm-hmm. which in the end kind of compound and give really big wins. And when you look back, you're thinking like, how did I end up here? That makes no sense. Like, I didn't do anything special. But it's because it's millions and millions of small positive changes and impact that you did consistently day over day in that got you to where you are. I don't know if you ever thought about that. When you kind of look back, you're like, wow, it's an interesting direction that my life has taken,
Definitely.
All kinds of circles and loops and everything. And but you realize that, like in language learning, you can't really fail unless you give up.
Oh, exactly. 100%.
So you just keep going and you just try new things. And if something doesn't work, you just, try something else. And that's why I really like languages.
Exactly. And you know what? For everyone listening, if you're learning a language or you're currently in a situation where you're not sure if you actually, have a future with this language, it sounds a bit like a relationship. It is a relationship, actually, with your languages. But one of the key things, if I look back, that I am very, very happy about, I guess, and proud of in terms of my language learning, is not... It's nothing about the outcome or, the score I got or the exams I passed or whatever, but it's very much about the discipline and the mindset that I was able to create and build up from having experienced all of the challenges that came with language learning and, going for something where you don't know or there is no clear right or wrong with. And in terms of, success, however you want to define success, a lot of the discipline and all of the, motivation or how to build up my own motivation when there is no external motivation, or how to actually fundamentally work at something over an extended period of time, like my YouTube channel or sport, I play tennis like 12 hours a week now. And when I started, I was 15, and then, there was also no way of knowing how long is it going to take for me to be able to play a game or whatever. Mm-hmm. But language learning has taught me, how to just put work in when you cannot see the end of the road, when everything looks dark and you just have to get up every day and work at something. And I think people idolize, these people who have achieved things. I'm by no means, where I aspire to be or where I want to be, but I'm well on my way. And it is really down to the fact that through this learning process, I have learned the fundamental things about grit, about how to put work in. And that is something that is so valuable that language learning gives you as well, if you stick to it. If you just ask or keep your mind open and have that curiosity of, what if I just put in that extra bit of work today? What if I just take the next step? And then the next day, what if I just take the next step? And that next step is going to really get you those results that you look at, you know, other people who have achieved great things in life, and you wonder, oh, they must have some sort of magic pill, as you were saying, or, you know, they've had help and whatever. Yeah, but they put in the work. Like, whatever it is that you are doing right now in life, you have to work at it. And unfortunately, people don't want to hear that, and they don't make peace with the fact that whatever it is, you don't have to be the best. You just have to start, and you have to do it and put work in.
Yeah. I think that's a kind of a two-sided or double-edged kind of proposition, because on one hand, I find it extremely exciting that I feel kind of limitless.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people, I think most people listening to this will have, you know, obviously we're all in different positions, and I understand there are some people who might have circumstances beyond their control that means they are not limitless. But I would guess that most people listening to this are in a comfortable country. They probably don't lack any kind of shelter or food, or, you know, they probably have a basic, all their basic needs met. And when that happens, I think humans are truly limitless. And I think what really excites me about that is that it scares me a little bit too, that how little we actually, I don't want to say work necessarily, because some people work very hard, but if you take like 100% as what you can do in a day, I think most people are stuck at somewhere like 50% or less.
Yeah.
And that's not a criticism. That's just the way things are. I mean, that's the law of averages, and that's the way the community is, the kind of society has been taught, is that we go to work, and when we go home from work, we are, it's off time, you know, it's time to relax and have some recreational activities, which is totally fine. I'm not dissing on that, and I'm definitely not one of those like, oh, you have to work 80 hours a week or anything. But
4 hours a day, Chris.
Right. No, not at all. But when I started to exert myself just a little bit, doing a little bit more than what is normal, what my let's say my university friends were doing at the time, the results were magnitudes higher.
Yeah.
And you start to wake up to the fact that, oh my God, there's so much potential out there. And that's not just for languages. Like, imagine to anyone listening, imagine if you spent 30 minutes on your target language this month every day. That's a huge progress. And it doesn't sound like a lot on a daily basis, but when you add it up, it really helps. And if you apply it to any other thing like fitness or tennis, as you said, the improvement is just going to feel amazing. And you think, sometimes I go like, well, what if I doubled that?
Yeah.
And I think being not afraid to be ambitious, I don't know about the countries that you've lived in, sort of the general mindset, but in Denmark, there's this kind of like mediocrity mindset where if you have any kind of ambition, people kind of try and pull you down, like the crab in a bucket kind of effect. You know, you don't think you're better than us, and that will never work, and, you know, why don't you just get a job?
Yeah. That highlights inferiority complex to me. That highlights people are not aware of their own power and the fact that you don't have to belittle or compare yourself to anyone else to be doing well in life and to be happy. And it's almost like, I'm not allowed to be happy. Society has told me I'm not allowed to be, so therefore you can't be, and I'm going to demonize you if you try to excel.
Yeah, I mean, you see it all the time. Like, look at, I'm sure, I mean, you have multiple YouTube channels. I'm sure you get people commenting.
Oh my God.
Horrible, horrible comments. And you think, I'm just trying to spread like the joy of languages. I'm not trying to, you know, win political elections or anything. This is a very, very it's a pastime almost, like it's a fun project, yeah. Right? And then people are like, excuse me, she said this word wrong, so obviously she's faking it all. She's just a fraud trying to sell her new course. And it's like,
but yeah, you know what? Man. Even if I was, like, who cares? Honestly, yeah.
But that's my point. Exactly. Yeah. It doesn't matter if it's true or not. It's just the mindset of the
people exactly.
writing that. It's all about there's something wrong in their life, so they feel like they need to take it out on
exactly. people
who are actually doing things. Like it's essentially jealousy, I guess.
Oh, it is.
But looking at you, it's yeah. like, okay, she's actually doing things. Not only is she doing things, she's also spending time documenting the things she's doing, which is like a two-for-one, you know, for people who are sitting at home watching Netflix all day. Again, not judging if that's what you want to do. Mm. They see someone like you, they're like, it reminds them of their own inaction.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. When I read comments, I don't take them personally at all. I honestly, when I read some of the criticism or negativity, I actually try and almost psychoanalyze the other person, because anybody who has the time to
yeah.
write anything critical is not spending time on their own goals. And I think just to call out something that you were saying before, you know, when when Chris asked all of you guys, you know, imagine yourselves this week, and what if you went, or if you ask yourself, what if I spent 30 minutes on this? The key repetitive word that you used, Chris, was I. And that's really important, because the people that are happy and full of gratitude and are striving towards things and are achieving things and are, you know, as I said, overall happy, they just stick to their lane. They focus on themselves.
Right.
And I know, like, I have been there where I have compared myself in the past, but all that does is it leads to suffering, and it's taking away time and energy that you could be transforming and using for your own goals. But fundamentally, it's about you being better than the you yesterday. And for me, right. I journal every morning, every evening. I've been doing it for like 3 years now. And one of the key questions I ask myself every morning is, how can I be better than myself yesterday? And that doesn't mean better in the sense of, you know, achieving more, whatever that means. But sometimes it's, you know, how can I relax more today? Because I haven't prioritized that. It's just
what
is important to me and my values right now. And how can I improve today by 1%? Or what one thing can I change to be better and to feel better today?
Mm. Yeah, that's it. That's what I believe in too. It's a single player game. It might look like a multiplayer game, but it's not. And that's why I said those things before, is that I think a lot of people are not aware of their own potential. And they might think that it requires some kind of, you know, extraordinary, let's say, ability or talent or skill, or they might think that maybe they've heard, like me, like my parents and my community and my country, they all say, well, it's all about, you know, doing this, this, and this, follow the recipe, buy a TV and get a car loan and a mortgage, you know. And again, nothing wrong with those things, but it just brings you down to a level where ambition is kind of minimized, and it's almost kept at a minimum. And so sometimes we forget that, you know, we are amazing beings everyone in their own unique way, and especially the brain. Like, and you know, the good thing with the brain right now is that we've got the internet, which gives us the ability to do anything. Like, could you imagine 50 years ago sitting down, writing a book and publishing it and getting like thousands or even hundreds of thousands of people? Well, I guess I could take your YouTube channel as an example. Like, could you imagine just casually starting your own TV channel 50 years ago? And how would you even get the camera? And I think that taking away some of those barriers of entry, making it a total free-for-all, like anyone can essentially record themselves. You know, even the camera in our phones now is better than the best movie camera probably 10, 15 years ago. So I think all those combined really, for me, calls for people to
be great. And you know, like you said, there's no, I'm not talking about trying to save the world or, you know, invent a cure for cancer or anything, although that would be nice too. But it doesn't yeah. have to be that scale of greatness. I'm not talking about necessarily changing the mm-hmm. world. I'm just, initially, I want you to change your world.
Exactly.
Like, I want you to look at your thing. It's like that thing in the plane, you know, take care of yourself before you take care of
the kids. Put on your own mask, yeah, before you assist others.
Yeah, exactly. And I think in life and in language learning, you have to basically play your own game. And there's this, I think it's an African old proverb, and I really love it. It's this idea of, if there's no enemy within, then the enemy outside can do you no harm. And it's so true. And every single time that I've ever tried to do something, I haven't been stopped by haters or people who criticize me or people who said, you know, I haven't even been stopped by my parents who said, why don't you just get a job? Or why do you do this? Why do you waste your time on this frivolous internet thing that you're doing? That has never really stopped me. That has never stopped me. But what has stopped me is my own internal doubts and sort of self-criticism.
I feel you so much on that. Yeah.
So I am truly my own worst enemy, which is tricky because I have to live with myself. You know, I can't separate those two.
You're stuck with yourself, Chris. I'm sorry.
That's it. I guess that's another realization that it will never be different.
Yeah.
And also one of my principles, which is sort of half ironic, you know, I have a few principles. Or maybe philosophies is a better word, actually. I have a few philosophies. And one of them is nothing is easy. And it's sort of ironic in a way. It's sort of half joking because obviously some things are easy. But I think as soon as you think that, everything becomes really difficult. So I think find it easier to just assume everything to be difficult from the beginning and then be surprised when they're not.
See, I would play devil's advocate on this one because I think that that can be a very dangerous belief to fall into if you believe that everything or that nothing is easy. Because actually Brené Brown, for those of you who don't know, who is a psychologist, like a worldwide, like renowned psychologist, she talks about this belief actually in one of her books. And she said that the belief that everything or that nothing is easy, everything is difficult, can actually cause you a lot of internal anxiety and kind of self-destruction. Because what happens if you have owned in on a skill so much that it becomes easy for you, but you actually make it so much harder for yourself to then – or you continuously make something harder for yourself because you are stuck in that belief. I think I do see the value in that, but I think it's important to even, you know, to continuously question our beliefs.
As
we move on in life.
And I'm always happy to take other impressions and I'm always happy to have my mind changed. Yeah. I think that the differentiator is that if thinking that everything is difficult stops you from doing something or it stops you from starting, then I think you have a problem. Yeah. But if the philosophy helps you to keep going because it's difficult, then I think it's useful. So I totally see where that is coming from. And I think it's also important to note that, I mean, that's why I said half joking because I don't really believe that everything is difficult. But I would say that what's the saying? Everything worth doing takes effort.
100%. No, I believe that very strongly.
I probably butchered that one, but basically the idea is that everything good in life comes from effort typically.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean it's difficult. It just requires effort, which sometimes
What is effort? It's just action. Over time.
Is it difficult to do something easy a lot of times? Probably. I mean, and I don't want to downplay that, you know, something like learning a language is not simple, and it's definitely not an easy task. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of concentration. But the rewards are also great in that respect. And I think it translates very well to things like fitness and also we talked about YouTube channels and blogs and podcasts and that kind of thing. If you do things that are difficult,
it's usually because they're meaningful, but also because they are worth it in the end. I mean, it's very hard to do something very consistent at a high level and not get any reward from it.
Yeah.
It's actually quite difficult to do. But I hope that people will, the main idea is to get people to start. I think getting over that first hurdle, and then the process itself should at some point take over.
Yeah, well, it becomes habitual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or you get like that feedback loop set up. Oh, I said something in French. The person I talked to smiled. I like that.
Exactly.
And so I'll do more of it. You know?
Exactly. I love that.
That's a good one. I think it's a little bit vain maybe, but it works. So why worry about it? But as someone who's studied psychology and obviously very interested in it, what kind of parallels do you see in between like language learning and psychology? And have you found anything in your psychology studies that you could use or have used in your language learning pursuits?
Wow. Well, Chris, I think to go into a lot of detail, we'd need a whole other episode. So let us know. But I'm kidding.
Yeah, comment below.
Partially kidding.
Back for part two.
Yeah. Well, actually, one of the key things that springs to mind is going off of what you were just talking about and in terms of beliefs. So I think that something I have noticed in terms of my studies and, you know, translating that into my life as a coach and teaching and all of that is about beliefs. And it is about I strongly, like, one of my principles is you're only limited by the limits that you set yourself. And I see that very much in people who come to learn a language. It, you know, one of my favorite quotes ever is, whether you believe you can or you can't, you're right in both instances. And the thing that the mindset that people have and the identity that people are attached to. So one concept that ties into that is about self-identity. So we are always on the outside, so externally, taking steps to prove what we believe is our identity. So for example, if I say, or if I purport and profess, you know what, I'm not an organized person, because I hold that belief about myself, everything in my external world is going to reflect that, because I have kind of set within my mind, yep, I'm not an organized person. So if I say to myself, I am an organized person, then I will take actions in order to do that. And I can say in terms of organization, that has been me as well. I used to think that I wasn't organized. And then through obviously, you know, working for myself, it kind of, well, you get thrown into needing to organize yourself more. And now I don't even remember who that old Lena was. So that is one concept about your self-identity. What are the things you believe are true about yourself, about you, who you identify yourself with, as in, you know, all the different elements? And how are you kind of expressing that in your everyday life? I guess that's one of the key things. As I said, Chris, there are so many things that I could talk about. But I guess, well, what specifically in terms of psychology, because psychology is such a broad area. I mean, there's cognitive psychology, there's behavioral psychology, there's, you know, the psychology of emotion. So is there a particular point that you would like to know if there are any kind of parallels between?
No, not really. I assume that psychology, like languages in a way, also mimic life in general. And so that not everything might be applicable, but you can certainly draw a lot of conclusions and parallels. But I was just curious from a sort of personal perspective, whether there was something that you had picked up yourself in your psychology studies that maybe benefited you especially, or maybe a funny realization or an important kind of wow moment that you got from studying. I know it's a huge degree or a huge degree of subject. It's a huge topic, of course, psychology. But what about learning languages, for instance? Did you ever get into something like that? Like, what are the reasons that we learn the way we learn, and are there any things we can do to influence influence that and make people more receptive to some of the learning?
Well, I think like personally, I love to draw parallels and find patterns between different life domains. So, you know, taking principles from things like personality and languages and different cultures and fitness and kind of trying to find what do they all have in common and what do we as people have in common when we set out to, you know, learn a language or learn any type of skill. So I think one of the things that I like to push boundaries. I always say, as you might have noticed, I'm a bit of I like to play devil's advocate sometimes and kind of just question things a lot. So
yeah,
I think when it comes to language learning, I would say stereotypes actually play a huge role in terms of the unconscious biases that we have that we may not actually be aware of. And I think, like, you know, you and I talk a lot about personal development, and I think that there are massive parallels, not so much between psychology, but personal development, which is obviously very much related to psychology. But I think that the best learners in general are the ones who are continuously trying to stretch and expand the boundaries of their reality and what they believe to be true and what they understand, you know, language to be and cultures to be, and really playing with the rules and understanding themselves, I think, fundamentally. Because a great learner is open, they are self-aware, they understand that they don't know everything, they are not perfectionistic. And I think that that is a huge issue in society and as well, you know, in the students that I work with. There, this idea of perfectionism and procrastination, I think those are the two biggest almost killers of any type of actual learning taking place and creativity, because people have not untangled where these issues, I'm going to call them issues, come from. Because fundamentally, like, you know, just because it's a widespread thing, procrastination or perfectionism isn't actually normal. Like, it's not okay, and it doesn't have to be a part of your reality. But I think, I think that level of self-awareness, I've seen the most successful people, people who achieve things, are really aware of who they are, where their weaknesses are, where their wounds are, where their strengths are. And they are they allow themselves to be vulnerable, and they allow themselves to stretch their own boundaries and the boundaries of their learning. So,
speaking of procrastination, that's obviously a topic that comes up quite frequently, because it's almost like whenever we decide to do something, that task becomes the hardest task to do in the world. So what was that old saying? I can do any amount of work at any time, assuming it's not the work I was supposed to do at that point. I think that's a great saying, and something that I definitely struggle with myself. So for the people listening at me, do you have any sort of ideas and suggestions for reducing procrastination and being more, I guess it's a function of organization maybe?
Yeah, but I think sometimes you can actually use procrastination to your advantage. So it comes back to self-awareness. Like, I know the type of tasks and things that I really struggle doing. I set up a system in a way where that task becomes so simple to do that, you know, other needs have been satisfied, and then I can do that task. So for example, every month I do my financial planning and kind of accounting reviews and stuff. I used to hate doing that, and now I've found a way to alleviate that stress, and I make sure that my weeks are full of, you know, me accounting for all of my needs. So having time to play, having time to rest, working, fitness, you know, so that everything is covered, so that when it comes to doing that thing, I feel more balanced, if that makes sense. So this is it's a very broad example. Like, procrastination is a huge thing, but I think
it's time to overwhelm. Like, is it because people take on too much at the same time without any kind of system to manage all the things?
I think it's a little bit tricky to discuss such a broad topic without having a very precise example, but it could be that as well. It's, you know, it could be to do with the fact that people set projects for themselves instead of tasks. This is something I've talked about for ages, but, you know, if you look at your to-do list, and I mean, you and I, Chris, we explored this a bit early on in the year, where, remember, we talked about like, oh, I'm gonna create a YouTube video, for example. Yeah. But that is actually a project, and most people have something like that on a to-do list as one task, whereas a YouTube video consists of scripting it, consists of picking the time you're going to film it, setting up the camera, charging your battery, filming the video, editing the video. Those are like, there are at least 8 to 10 tasks under all of that. And I think that that is one of the biggest causes of procrastination, is that people haven't broken down a task and they are not aware of where their time goes. And if you know, I like to use kind of, I have a flexible structure in my life. So I have a calendar. I know what I'm going to do on certain days, but I haven't scheduled everything minute by minute, because I love to have that kind of rebellious space of, if I don't want to do that in the morning, I know that I'll get it done in the evening. So I think just being aware of what your vices are, what loops you get caught up in, what actually sparks procrastination, and then slowly, like, once you have that awareness, really building up a life or a system or a structure that works for you, that allows you to alleviate, you know, the stress or the overwhelm from not doing something, and slowly altering that.
I think it's difficult. That's definitely one of my biggest challenges, and I think the idea of breaking everything down into the smallest bit is definitely something that helps. It makes it much more manageable to get started. But then the problem that I run into, not that this is necessarily a private therapy session, but I run into the problem of organization, because if you ask me, okay, can you break down the steps of writing a blog post, for instance? Yes, I can do that. But then how do I, this is like a rhetorical question. It's not, you don't have to give me like a step-by-step answer, but the problem that I often face is the actually putting it into routine and habit of going through and using some kind of software, maybe like, you know, Asana or to-do list, some kind of advanced to-do list, to not only have a system in place, but also a way to schedule it and keep track of all the tasks to the point where you can kind of offload it. Because what I find is, and I'm sure a lot of people listening have this problem too, is that I tend to keep all my to-do lists in my head, and that brings anxiety, and that brings a lot of stress, and brings a lot of procrastination too, because there's just too much in your head to kind of, you don't know what the next thing is. So I don't know if that's a question there, but it's a challenge to
what you're saying.
Find the next step and actually do the follow the plan, I guess. If you're talking in language learning terms, you might have several textbooks and courses and lessons with teachers, and like, how do you organize yourself before and after the job itself? You know, cutting it into small tasks, I think people can easily do. I definitely have no problem doing that. But how do you then act out those lists of tasks in a kind of repeatable and habitual way?
Well, honestly, I think that we all put ourselves under way too much pressure sometimes. And including from what I'm hearing from you, Chris, I think that you might have this idea of, I'm doing something wrong. I'm wrong. This shouldn't be like this. Something's not serving me. I've got to change everything. I think that honestly, sometimes you do need to let, like, the system that you have had this far has served you. Maybe not to the best way possible, but it has served you. So you haven't had a need or found a need to alter that in any way. I think that honestly, sometimes, like, a life is full of ups and downs. You know, nobody's perfect. So I think, first of all, like, this is my belief anyway, whether you agree with it or not, you know, that's fine. But from what I've experienced within myself as well, sometimes you need to get to a point of complete and utter dissatisfaction to change something. Yeah. And sometimes you do need to mess up over and over again. Like I'm going to proclaim this now. I'm one of those people that unfortunately or fortunately, however you want to see it, I learn from my own mistakes, and also in situations where other people might say, how did you not learn from somebody else's mistake with this? That's the process that has up till now been my process until it wasn't, you know? So sometimes you do need to let yourself or let things get to a point where you cannot take it anymore. So you, out of your own intrinsic motivation, go and find another way of doing this, or you seek out help, or you just try and you know, figure it out. Like there's a fabulous book, Everything is Figureoutable, with this as well, Everything is Figureoutable. So
yeah.
I think, yeah, just trying to then take a step back and be like, okay, well, what is one thing that I could alter that could have a drastic change immediately? Doesn't have to solve the whole problem, doesn't have to change everything, but what can I use that is going to help me achieve, let's say, 80% of what I want to achieve, or 60%, or even 50%, you know? And for example, yeah, the avoidance of wanting to do a task by a certain deadline. Well, there are lots of things, like just start exploring and say, well, would getting a virtual assistant help me? Would using a scheduling software help me? And I think for me as well, like I've developed this love of writing down all of my accomplishments at the end of the day and analyzing them. So I've, you know, in my schedule, I've now created a space where I kind of reflect and look at, okay, how have I managed my tasks? And trust me, I forget things as well. Like, I think the biggest, yeah, I used to be very much like you a few years ago. I thought, no, this is proof of me having a great memory and a great brain. Like, intelligent people don't need to write things down. I can hold everything in my memory. I thought, oh my God, Lena, what BS were you believing then? So I just use like the Microsoft to-do list, and I have different categories. I just make sure, you know what, on a weekly basis, once a week, whenever that is, I'm going to review it, look over the things that I haven't done, the things that I have done. It's just, yeah, there are different ways of managing yourself. It doesn't mean they have to be on a daily basis. They can be on a weekly basis, on a monthly basis. I'm not going to advise an annual basis, but, you know, just setting up review mechanisms for yourself. And I think that that is very much a personal choice.
Yeah, and I guess it's also impossible to give like two general guidelines on this, because everyone is so different when it comes to these challenges of productivity, which is at the core of learning a language.
Well, it encompasses so many things. You know, it does come back to beliefs as well. Like, I don't know, for everybody listening, like the each individual previous experiences that have led to the beliefs they hold now in terms of you know, setting tasks and deadlines, that all plays a huge role in how you lead your life and, you know, the tools that you use, whether you think they are more beneficial than they are not. And it's just, yeah, it's a whole other can of worms that we could dive into.
Yeah, I know this topic is endless, basically, and there are lots of other episodes of the podcast here on Actual Fluency where I've talked about productivity. Anyone interested in the topic, definitely go back and listen to some of the archive episodes, because it's really at the core of language learning is productivity, and that's a cool part, because then once you figure out your personal productivity, then you can apply it to everything, like cleaning your house or playing tennis, like we talked about before. So that's why that excites me a lot. But it's also, I must admit, it's also the most fascinating thing for me, how humans are capable of so much, but at the same time struggle so much with what from the outside looks so simple. You know,
very true.
I've got a few extra pounds on me, I'm not going to lie, and people who've seen pictures of me will know that's true. And I know exactly what I need to do to lose weight. Yet, I'm not doing it. you know, and I think for language learning, there are a lot of parallels there where it sounds a little bit simple sometimes. Oh, you just have to do 30 minutes a day or a session a day or whatever the activity is. And we still don't do it. We know exactly what's good for us, but we don't do it. That's, to me, is one of the most fascinating aspects of the productivity question.
Yeah, well, that's why you have coaches and you have, you know, support networks and things, because we can't forget that we as humans are social beings and we are not robots. We cannot, you know, for many different reasons, you know, emotional, biological, physical reasons, whatever, we cannot do everything by ourselves, and we weren't supposed to, you know.
No.
So
absolutely,
that's the thing. Knowledge is pretty much meaningless if you don't put it into action. And how you do that, however, that's for you. Like if you care about the end result, then yeah, you will sign up for courses, for accountability kind of groups or trainings, or, you know, you do need sometimes that external support to help you then find how you can maintain that habit internally without it being something that you consciously need to work on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think it's just so funny that we, in almost every case, we know exactly what we need to do. And it doesn't happen for a multitude of reasons, whether those are related to overwhelm or uncertainty or lack of confidence or lack of belief in oneself or whatever it is. That will forever interest me and fascinate me.
Yeah.
But like you said, it's going to be, I think we're going to have to do an all day live event one day.
We're going to organize an all day event, Chris. That's the thing.
Yeah. Well, again, if people are interested in that, definitely send me a message.
Yeah.
We'll see what we can do. We'll do an all day psychology and language learning mastermind.
I'm excited already. I love
Lena giving a couple of presentations and me acting as the guinea pig and an interviewer, maybe.
Yeah.
I just want to thank you for coming on the show and talking about so many. I know I put you on the spot with a few difficult and deep questions, but I think
that's
you've done extremely well answering them. And I hope that people got some inspiration for how they can deal with their own kind of challenges and inspiration for how they approach their own language learning. And like we said, other parts of life that you might want to, you might have an interest in leveling up or trying something new also, you know, don't be afraid to try new things. That's one of my other philosophies. Try everything. I got that from Zootopia, which that's not the best way for philosophy, but a great movie.
I love that movie. I watched it last week.
Yeah, I love
amazing
it too.
Amazing movie.
And that theme song is very catchy as well.
Yeah.
Try everything. I listen to that a lot and it gives me, it's more motivational for me than listening to like speeches and things.
Well, see, and that's one of the core things as well. Find what works for you.
Yeah, just watch Zootopia all weekend and
exactly.
Oh, thank you so much, Lena.
No, thank you so much for having me, and thank you as well for everybody listening, for, you know, taking the time out of your day to learn something new, to explore a new avenue, and yeah, very grateful. Thank you very much, Chris.
Last question, where can people find out more about you? Where can they go to watch more like this?
Well, you can find me on YouTube if you just put in my name, Lena Vasquez, on Instagram as well, on Facebook, which is Lena Vasquez Official, just my name as well, and LinkedIn. Yeah,
I'm nice. You're everywhere.
I'm everywhere. I'm present on all the platforms.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Lena.
Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye. This episode was brought to you by Optilingo. Learn over 18 languages through guided immersion by going to www.optilingo.com. That's OPTILINGO.com.
Thanks for listening to the Actual Fluency Podcast with Chris Broholm. To get more language learning tips, strategies, and inspiration, join the Actual Fluency email club by going to actualfluency.com/join. We hope you enjoyed the show and hope you've gotten some useful information. Till next time, this is the Actual Fluency Podcast, signing off.